have you seen Hudson change over the time you've been here?
The money has come to Hudson. That is the largest change. When I first arrived here, generally there was one side of Warren Street when you lived in the neighborhoods that people wanted to live within. And on the other side, the north side of Warren, there were houses that were in disrepair, or what the real estate companies call dereliction. So obviously that's where people who were struggling were living. And it's interesting because Hudson, when I originally came, although I wasn't exactly aware of it, it had been a town filled with crack. And over time, that moved to a certain area of town and was not everywhere. And although there's residue of that still here, I think that you could perhaps, if you wanted drugs, you could get any drug you wanted here. It also has a big history of prostitution, and that still, I am given to understand, is extant in Hudson. I think that now that Hudson has caught on through the repeated publishing of articles about it in the New York Times, it's caught on with people who have lots of discretionary money. So, in fact, we see that the Basilica, which is being developed by Melissa Oftemar, who was originally with the band Hole and then later joined Billy Corgan, and is now living in Hudson with her husband, Tony Stone, who is a filmmaker, and their child. And Melissa's father-in-law, William Stone, now in the Basilica, and they have lots of wonderful programming there. Someone has bought the Warren Inn, which was originally a little motel made out of a former movie theater. And when I first came here, we were having some difficulty closing on the house because someone had slapped a lien on the house with the former owner. So we had to live in the Warren Inn for 3 weeks because we had cats and no one would take us with cats. We thought we were going to move right in, and that didn't come to pass. We had to wait for 3 weeks. And it was quite unsavory to stay there at the time. Now I think it'd be turned into some version of a very hip and fun hotel. And the woman who bought it has also bought a beautiful property that belonged once to Don Christensen and his wife. And he was quite involved in the spearheading the movement revolving around the historical interests, the architecture, the making sure that no industry that was harmful would be coming to Hudson, and that sort of thing. At any rate, his house has been up for sale for some time, but now it rapidly was moved off the market by this woman who bought the Warren Inn. So she's going to be living here and putting up a wonderful, fun establishment for people to stay in when they come to visit. Hudson's become a real cultural destination. And I think the makeup of Hudson is quite different now, too. While it continues to be a very popular town for the LGBT community, it is also becoming a very popular town for young families. So that's exciting, because when you see young families coming to town, you know that there's going to be a revitalization of a town because they're going to bring their children up here. The schools are going to change for the better. There is a prison at the core of Hudson, not in the right in the middle of the town, but it is here in town on a hill. And that prison is due to be closed. That's going to be a wonderful thing for Hudson. And I'm hoping it will be a university department that moves there. For instance, Cornell might want to move a Department of Environmental Studies, or Bard might want to move some other sort of, you know, a music department there, or what have you. You know, there are lots of opportunities out there for a cultural institution or an educational institution when that prison goes. And it will be going. It will be closing. And unfortunately, New York State has made a real gainful business, and I think, of course, the United States, out of prisons. So that needs to stop. That needs to stop, and New York State needs to go back to being the place that nurtures so many good ideas and healthful ideas and culturally significant ideas. That's changing. This area is changing. The Hudson Valley is changing. And Hudson was, you know, considered a lost cause until the early 70s. And the people most responsible for saving it were those of the LGBT community coming out of New York, because they recognized how important the architecture was and that it was a diamond in the rough, very much worth saving. The town itself has every example of early American architecture in it. The town burned down twice in the 19th century. In 1838, it burned down 30 buildings, and in 1844, another 100 buildings burned. And when that happened, the town was rebuilt as a Victorian town. That's why it looks Victorian. But there are still examples that did not burn in those fires of Dutch colonial, early American colonial, Federalist, Georgian, and so forth. And then, of course, you have tons of Victorian-looking buildings. Even some of the buildings that were originally early American colonial buildings were, as Americans are wont to do, transformed into Victorian buildings because it was the fashion. So they put Victorian detailing on it, architectural elements that looked Victorian. But it is a charming town visually. And honestly, I fell in love with it visually, as I often do with everything. Whatever I really love, it comes through my eyes first. And then, because I'm probably more of a right and left-brained person, I love to write about those things, those visual experiences or visions that seem very important to me. I personally don't feel very American. I've lived overseas a lot, and I've traveled overseas a lot. So I've never really been married to place exactly, not even the South. It's a lovely place, but I don't want to live there again. And if I leave New York, I'm sure that I won't want to live here again. But there are many people here who would never leave Hudson. I just must be a restless soul. I'm always looking for another new adventure.
Is there anything else you'd like to say about Hudson?
Well, there is something that is very interesting and very dear to my heart. I had a friend who was HIV positive who moved up here from New York City, and we became quite close friends, and I enjoyed his company a great deal. And he passed away, not here eventually. He went back to Arizona where his family is from. But he passed away, but I became aware of the fact that there are numbers of people who lived through the most terrifying times of the HIV, shall we call it a plague? It was so terrible. I mean, it was just killing people right and left. And some people survived it and made it to the point where now, of course, there are drugs that maintain you and you can live a healthy lifestyle and a normal life, you know, normal life expectancy. So that is a very important aspect of this town that maybe people don't know, is that there are a lot of courageous people living here who have seen some terrible, terrible things, but they survived it. And I almost think that that's very significant, because not only have people survived HIV here, people have survived all sorts of things. You know, I myself survived the deaths of two very important partners of mine. And I think that the makeup of Hudson involves an element of surviving. You know, people who survived something terrible, who came here and made a new life for themselves. And also a creative life for themselves. Some people were not able to express themselves creatively where they were, but then upon arriving in Hudson, they were really able to express that creativity here very freely. I love that about this community. It's a place that is not censored. It's funny because, you can do all sorts of things here and have openings with controversial art and so on and so forth. And it just kind of goes by people here, you know, especially the population who's always been here, whose families have been here for 150, 200 years or more. They're not bothered by it. They don't notice those things. I had an opening a couple of weeks ago, and while the exhibit is certainly could not qualify as controversial, it is thought-provoking. However, there were so many people at the opening, they spilled onto the sidewalk, and they were carrying their drinks out on the sidewalk, which is a big no. And we had go cups, you know. If it's an opaque cup, it's not necessarily an alcoholic beverage. And the police came three times to investigate. And finally, a policeman said, you know, the next time we come, we may have to write someone a ticket. So they're not really concerned. You know, they were having a slow night. So that's sort of a slight indication of the tolerance level of this town. You can do a lot of provocative things here and not have a problem. Certainly, the population of the historical district in Hudson is not going to object. And perhaps that was one of the things that drew me here, because art can be controversial. And I have tended to be involved with, on occasion, controversial subjects as a curator.
Would you like to talk
about that? Well, for instance, I curated a very large entrepreneurial show called Elvis Plus Marilyn, Two Times Immortal, that was written as a mathematical equation. And that idea was, in and of itself, was controversial, largely because I guess no one had really wanted to take Elvis Presley or Marilyn Monroe as serious art subjects. But in fact, many artists, including very, very top tier artists, did works about them. So I curated that show, and it had artists like Ed Ruscha and Peter Blake, and you know, just a lot of big people. I don't want to go, you know, Bill Eggleston. A lot of people were in it that you would recognize, but I made a point of also curating people you never heard of, because for me, it's very, very important to show viewers that art should not be considered good because of the name attached to it. And in fact, art should not be considered good or bad, but rather one should consider how much or how little you have learned from looking at a piece of art, and take away the judgmental part of it. Because again, artists are putting their souls on the wall for you to see. So to bring a value judgment to that seems inappropriate to me. So my point in curating that show was to discuss the idea of the development of icons at the hands of artists who tend to be among the vanguard to recognize when someone is becoming an icon, and in particular, a religious icon. So that show developed this idea that there were four stages to developing an icon when artists were dealing with it. And that is, first, they become culturally quite well known. And then they become how can I put this? They're cultural figures, but as people come to know them, they become more. I'm not sure how to put this exactly. They become more. They become spiritual, and this stage can involve androgynous figures. Elvis and Marilyn certainly were androgynous in certain ways. Elvis, by the way he dressed and used makeup, and Marilyn was psychologically androgynous due to the fact that she had been, as a child, molested on at least 13 or 14 occasions as a child, because she was farmed out to foster homes. And so there is an element of androgyny in both of them. And that element is actually very important to pushing the icon into the last stage of that development, which is the religious stage. And in the context of this theory that I was developing, the religious stage is actually to be considered only an elevated form of culture. Nothing more, Because religion, actually, in my books, gets far, far away from spirit. So that was one of the efforts that I made. That show went to 10 venues here in the United States, opening at the ICA Boston, and 7 venues in Japan. And it went to Tokyo, went to Yokohama, Hokkaido, Kyushu. It was quite the show. Really interesting. And it went to Japan because the Japanese already got the idea of Marilyn Monroe as a goddess or Elvis Presley as a god. Their culture easily incorporated that idea. I think it would have been a harder sell in Europe, maybe not, because it's very secular. I mean, Europe's much more secular than the United States is. But, you know, it just was a natural for Japan. So it was a wonderful experience. So that started my career in independent curating. And I went on to do some other projects, like Visualizing the Blues, which again showed people you never heard of next to people like Andre Serrano, or again, it was all photography, so of course Bill Eggleston was in that show also. And then others who were not as well known. So, you know, in a way, I've been able to put together my thoughts about how much I love humanity with how engaged I am with spirit through a career in art. And I've been very happy about that. And I've been really happy about my professional life. It's been extremely fulfilling. And of course, my most fulfilling experience in life is having been a mother, which for me is children are the greatest creations.
Do you have any questions for me?
Yes, actually, you know, I'm very concerned that Hudson will have a great library and also a great oral history department within that library. I'm wondering how you see oral history fitting into the current plans for that library, or if you know about that. Yeah, I'm hoping that it will have a very strong oral history component. Suzanne Snyder may be able to affect something like that, you know, making sure that there is a department like that. Because this is such a rich area of the country for oral history. There's just so many people here that have so much to say, you know, that have lived here, that have lived through unbelievable things. And of course, this is the most populated part of the country too. So there's lots to learn. And it's important that that happen here.
Are there any people you would like to name for the record, for the interview?
For the record, in what way? The
specific people who you would like to cite in terms of importance in your life for this record.
Okay, well, of course, my children, Blaise McDerris, who lives in Brooklyn, and Glennis McDerris, who lives in Beverly Hills. But, you know, there's some people here in town that I just adore and that I think have a long history. Vince Mulford, for instance. Carol Osterink, who has been so steadfast in working with the library and now working on a blog that is extremely popular. Sam Pratt, who has been a champion of the most important causes in the area. Peter Jung, also the same in that regard. He has been a champion of making sure that detrimental companies and regulations don't come to town. There's just so many people here that are so wonderful. It's hard to think of them all. Carrie Haddad, who was the original gallerist here and who is very civic-minded and is just full of very cheerful and upbeat. My neighbor, Steve Izaz, who's just a fantastic man, whose partner also runs a beautiful modernist and 20th century furniture, art and antiques kind of store across the street. Gosh, I feel sort of put on the spot because there's so many people I would name. The wonderful woman who has come from Switzerland to buy the house that I lived in for 12 years. And she's just fantastic. Her name is Brigitte Gefeller. And she's going to make a wonderful citizen of Hudson, is opening a bed and breakfast. Gosh, there are all kinds of people, you know, they're just, and all kinds of stores and restaurants. I would say that, honestly, this is a town of people that I adore. I don't know anybody I don't like here. Isn't that crazy? But it's a wonderful place to live. There's a really great radio station here, WGXC. It's just insane. They have wonderful programming. Richard Roth covers cultural subjects and is a wonderful interviewer. There are just so many wonderful things going on here. So I'm deeply proud of this town. In the short span of the period of time I've been here, the town has just blown up. It's amazing. We'll see what happens. Stay tuned.
Are there any other people who you would recommend me interview?
Oh, yes. Definitely Ben Smallford. Probably Carol has already been interviewed. There's a very interesting woman named Jen Houle, H-O-U-L-E. She's one of the partners in La Perche, which is a French bakery and restaurant between 2nd and 3rd. That's a very interesting story, how they brought from France an oven to bake in. And this oven is the oven that produces French bread in France. And they've brought it to Hudson. So there's a little bit of France here, too. It's a fantastic place to live. It's very international, but it has a real local presence as well. And of course, let's not forget that the Dutch are fantastic, fantastic influences here. David Voorhees, fabulous man, living here much longer than myself. And he and his partner Joe have restored a beautiful colonial house, and they have a large garden to the side. that is beautifully done. And David knows a tremendous amount about Dutch history. And I highly recommend him. Because, you know, people, the Dutch influence gets lost in the mix here. People come here and they are so impressed by the way it looks now that they forget about that the Dutch actually settled here, and that whalers were the reason that Hudson was established. It was a whaling port of sorts. They didn't leave here to go whaling, probably, but they brought the whales back here to be rendered. And that's how it came into being. Then, after that, the brewing of spirits, prostitution, gambling, the many companies of volunteer firefighters who actually fought each other outside of a burning building to see which company would get the right to put the fire out, somewhat counter to what they were supposed to be doing. But when I first moved here, there were something like 6 or 7 separate volunteer firefighting houses within the confines of the historic district of Hudson. It was a wonderful aspect of Hudson, characteristic. But sadly, they've been consolidated in a modern engine house, you know, that has no character. It's made out of, it looks like cinder blocks. And so that's kind of sad. Those buildings still exist and are important historical buildings, but now they're owned by private owners, all except one, that refused to be consolidated. Interesting, huh? I mean, they could have all refused and gone on retaining this kind of presence, very big presence in Hudson. But they, you know, they felt it was the way of the future. And it probably is economically. There are others I would recommend you interview. But, you know, I'll think of them later, and then I'll have to come bring you a list.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate this. Okay.